Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Welcome to this latest episode of the Property Exchange podcast. This time, what's happening in the world of property now the Liz Truss economic experiment is behind us? Can it recover? In this episode, we're focusing on the volatile mood in the residential property market and also in the commercial market. How much has the hike in mortgage rates that followed the catastrophic mini-budget slowed demand as buyers fail to secure the finance they need? Are house prices headed south and offices, shops and hotels a no-go zone? Or are people still house hunting on the basis that this could be the moment when they secure their dream home for a little less than before? To get some answers to these questions and more, I'm joined as usual by Dominic Agace, CEO of Winkworth, and also by Adam Stackhouse, Head of Developments and Commercial Investments. Okay, first to you, Dominic. Sum up for us the mood in the residential market. I know that number of applicants per property is a key metric for you. Has it fallen dramatically or by not very much, in fact?
So it's been a fairly dramatic time since the mini-budget. Heightened drama around the sort of crisis around the gilts and the withdrawal of mortgage products and the increase of rates to rates that I think people were expecting perhaps to happen in sort of late 2023. But since its reversal, it's been thawing and we're seeing those rates come down and things again look a little rosier. As you say, though, it's interesting to put context in that sort of moment of crisis. And one of the things we do is look at what we call demand, I suppose, which is the number of applicants per properties we list that we have. And then, and the sort of telling point is, you know, that movement indicates, I suppose, price increases or price reductions. So in the nadir of sort of late September, beginning of October, when things were looking fairly drastic, we're just interested to note that we're running at 7 applicants per property. So prior to September, it was 10 applicants per property. And in 2021, it was 10 applicants per property. In the sort of bull run, I suppose, post-pandemic of enthusiastic buyers looking to change their living arrangements. But then you look at sort of, we do this historically, obviously, and have data going back many years. And then you look back, 2020, very difficult to tell because of, for a brief part, we all shut down. But 2019, we were also at 7 applicants per property. So I thought that was quite interesting context, really. 2019 was not a year of price growth. We had the borrower's bounce towards the end, but it was a fairly flat year with its challenges politically. And so when you look at that, I think that's quite encouraging for where a pretty dramatic period and how that affected the property market.
So what you're saying is that we're almost going back to a more normal market, that the period of the pandemic was abnormal.
Yeah, I think the property market lives off momentum. And I think what you had coming out of lockdown was huge momentum created by things we never expected to happen. You know, more space, people living in houses, looking at cracks all day long and wanting to change. And that combined with ultra low interest rates led to this sort of charge. And we've seen prices go up by, you know, 20% in some areas. So huge increases in sort of 10% this year, particularly in London. So I think what you saw is that whole effect halting that momentum. So we're now in a period, I suppose, of adjustment. And, you know, the applicants have certainly dropped off significantly. But as I say, when you look at applicants per property, you can see that the supply-demand balance has been slightly maintained by a drop-off in properties as well. So do I think how the future will unfold from here? I suppose what we're really looking at, I dread to say, is a slightly early Christmas as people, you know, settle into the news and a new environment, which is a sort of rebasing of interest rates, I suppose, and cost of finance. And then people will regroup in January. And I think that will be more normal than perhaps was debated in sort of late September.
We keep hearing reports of people being unable to secure the finance they need. What's the experience of your clients currently?
Yeah, so that, I mean, that was the huge issue post the mini budget and the sort of run on gilts, I think is the phrase. You know, 1,000 mortgage products were withdrawn, rates went up to 6.5%. There were lots of challenges, and that was where the sort of real fear came in, and obviously why it was reversed. I think, can people now do it? Rates are coming down. So, I mean, you saw the Bank of England governor come out the other day and talk about where he thought rates would end up. At the moment, they're still coming down slowly. I mean, they're at best five-year fixes of 5.25. That was 6.5% in the crisis moment. So that's already come down a chunk. I think it's got further to go. And then what you're also seeing, I suppose, is, well, now that's coming down and gilts are at 4.5 and back to pre mini budget or fiscal event levels. I think you're seeing more mortgage offers coming back to the market. So there's more availability of finance than there was. It's getting cheaper, having peaked. And I think there are other ways to play it as well. What's interesting is that we're seeing a lot of people who are going on trackers. So obviously trackers have operated in a different way. The mortgage headlines that one sees are very much based on fixed mortgages, five, and that's a different source of funding for banks and how they fund those rates. When you look at trackers, you're seeing at 0.75 above base, so you can get a tracker at 3.75 at the moment. The interesting play is that people will take those trackers. There's no early repayment charges. And so as you see fixed terms drift down towards a sort of new, more normalised level of funding, the 4.5% gilts, not the 6.5% we saw in the sort of peak, you can switch over to your fixed. So you can kind of play the tracker and then move over at the appropriate time.
Now, when we had our chat before we start this podcast, you and I were discussing the Mortgage Market Review, the MMR, under which there were very, very tough affordability checks imposed on anybody getting a mortgage over the past 5 or 6 years. To what extent do you believe that those affordability checks will support prices? Or do you believe that these falls of 10% or more in house prices are a reasonable forecast of what lies ahead?
When you think of what's different this time around in the property market to previous crises and issues in the economy, and really there were a lot of lessons learned in 2008, and a lot of regulation came into how lenders operated, and there are further lessons learned during the pandemic. So, as you say, everyone in the last 5 years has been stress tested to 7% as a cost of finance. Now, as I say, at the peaks, we were going to 6.5%. So the homeowners are there with a stress test in their affordability measures, which is, you know, a critical factor. I think the other part is the loan to values are very different. You know, we're not talking a world where Northern Rock and 125% loan to value mortgages. You know, there was much stricter requirements on equity. Well, there is much stricter requirements on equity required to buy a property. And I also think, you know, there more people are on fixes because of the crisis. I think the number is 50% of cash, 2/3 of the remaining 50% are 2 or 5 year fixes. So there's a very different structure to the homeowner's finances or mortgage arrangements than there has been previously. And so when you look at, you know, more dramatic, obviously there's always in the drama, house prices are a popular subject, and you know there are many different predictions for it. But when you think about those factors, Then there's plenty of comfort to take. There aren't really, by that my indications, unless unemployment changes, and it's obviously at record high levels of employment, there aren't the forced sellers that perhaps people were concerned about. And I think it's also interesting to look at the behaviour that happened. You know, and one of the big questions is, I was asked, was, you know, were there loads of fall-throughs and things in residential at the time, which is understandable. People sort of see that. And it's, it again, that wasn't the case. It's interesting because we're in a different type of market, a different type of change. It's a rebasing, really. I mean, we've had 10 years of ultra low rates. There's not a situation where, if you hunker down, you weather the storm for 3 months and then you come back to the market. You know, really, long term rates are going back to around between 4 and 5%. I think as a sort of new normal, and that's the best predictions of many, and I think the Bank of England included. And so, you know, if you're engaged in a transaction and you're not going to have a cheaper rate, really, by delaying it or hunkering down for 3 months or pulling out of a deal. If you had a rate at 3.5% locked in your mortgage offer, it was a great idea to crack on with that.
So, going to press you on this. 5% fall, 10% fall, or rather less?
Yes, that's the magic questions. I think, you know, we saw 0.9, I think it was in October, drop off. I think, you know, it could be around, I think you're going to see a slow drifting of prices. I don't think, as I said, for the reasons and the structuring of the sell side, you're going to see the dramatic falls. There have been various forecasts. It feels like that drifting of 0.5, 0.9 a month may be the answer. And so you're looking at around, I would have thought, sort of 5% coming off this year. As you know, people do, the buy side is limited by affordability, and clearly those that transact may reduce to take that. But that is even in the context of 10% increases this year and 20% in the last 2 years. So, you know, there is, I suppose, a lot of room in those that have brought, you know, even at the beginning of this year, to take a slightly more realistic rather than optimistic approach to selling their house and proceed with doing what they want to do in terms of their lifestyle and where they want to live.
So is this the moment to go out and actually seize that dream home?
It's a question that's often asked, and I think the days of speculation in residential property, I think, have sort of waned over the years through policy, I think, of governments. They don't, you know, they wanted the owner-occupier, and I think people, and stamp duty costs, obviously, meaning transactions, you know, the property decision is a long-term decision on where you want to live. And when you look at it, it's really got to be for 5 years. So I think that's a normal horizon. If you have the property available that you like and you can afford the finance on a 5-year period, then, you know, what might happen, there might be the property coming to the market now that hasn't been available. I mean, one area I've thought about and it's yet to play out, but what to make sense is potentially you're going to see more of the larger properties coming to the market. And that's driven really by, I think, downsizers. So there are many things going on. You know, you've got energy bills going up and a greater focus on energy efficiency in your house. You've got costs of building, costs of maintenance going up, and obviously increased cost of finance. And I think, unlike other events or periods in property markets, you know, that's everyone's hunkered down and locked down, interest got cheaper. And I think what you might see this time is downsizers taking that step forward to reduce the size of their property. You know, they don't need the two extra rooms. It costs them more to heat. They're in a more efficient place. And why not do that in a sort of cost of living, I suppose, cost of living crisis? So I think there might be more opportunity for once-in-generation houses that have been locked up effectively by families for 30 years to take that step and get one for yourself.
So opportunities in that sector of the market. Are we going to see landlords selling smaller properties because they simply cannot pass on higher mortgage costs to tenants?
I think so. I think the investment side, as I said, is affected to a much greater degree than the owner-occupier life requirements or needs-based transacting. So the increase in cost of finance is a problem for your buy-to-let investor. I mean, it's a problematic area. There's been a reduction in supply for various reasons we've discussed over the various podcasts, you know, due to some change in taxation and regulation. And what that's meant is that, you know, you need less. You can't sustain the level of gearing you can sustain your buy-to-let investment has gone down. You know, it was down to about 50%, and I think the cost of finance means that we have to be lower again. And really, that will lead to a shortening of supply, I think, as people consolidate their portfolios to have lower debt within them to make them viable. The rents, you know, rents are the other side of the seesaw, the equation, really, which, you know, are growing rapidly. So I don't think you can force a landlord's not be able to force just because their mortgage costs have gone up onto a tenant. But rents are going up because of a lack of supply, which if you were a cash investor would be a good opportunity. But I think that market's got, you know, difficulties, really. It's difficulties with tenants because the lack of supply is pushing rents up. Difficult for landlords because increased costs is making it unsustainable. So I do think there are problems in that part of it.
Adam, you head up Winkworth's commercial division. That's offices, shops and certain mixed-use developments. What's the mood like in that market post-mini-budget? Panic-stricken or just resigned to a few difficult years ahead?
Well, thank you, Anne. I think the word resignation is not something that is a true representation of anybody in property. So there's plenty of energy and there's lots of questions being asked. I would say immediately to you that there's no signs of panic in terms of our day-to-day dialogue with investors and vendors alike. And I think it's more summarised by perhaps the two words that caution and questioning. And we have to remind ourselves when we look at these particular junctures in the market that we've got some incredibly positive long-term trends. Most commentators are describing this as more of a pause for breath or a moderation of the market against the record periods of growth that Dom's highlighted. And it has been mentioned by most commentators in the media over the last 10 days that they expect the market to return to growth in 2024.
Are there any bits of your markets that are less hard hit?
One of the important drivers for real estate, particularly in the southeast, is the number of visitors that are coming into the UK. And base rates are important where debt requirements are concerned, but exchange rates are important to encourage overseas visitors and overseas investment. And I would say that a lot of large-scale new developments that attract a lot of media attention, Battersea Power Station would be a really fine example of that, that launched just 2 to 3 weeks ago. These large-scale urban regeneration schemes with lots of amenity on site are very, very attractive to tourists when they come over to the UK. And what we're finding is that if there's a tourism link for any particular shopping centre, either out of town or otherwise, or any new development close to a particularly key historic monument or something of attraction to tourism generally, they're the ones that are least affected by this genuine downturn in activity.
So actually, it's going back to location, location, location again.
Well, you could say that, but of course, the locations are a little less predictable than they were perhaps 20 or 30 years ago. But equally, to counterbalance what I've just said to you, there are people in the market that have made mistakes. It's important to highlight that small to medium-sized developers are significantly overstretched in some cases. Their balance sheets are under some pressure and lenders are keeping a very close eye on what's going on. Looking back at the potential for sales to ease off going into 2023 and new build reservations perhaps tailing off as well, it is likely that some of those small to medium house builders will have some issues with raising equity.
Can you give us a sense of what's happening to yields for investors?
Yes, certainly can. I mean, people look at all asset classes on the whole. Even small scale investors will be really quite agile nowadays with their pension pots, and they'll be carefully assessing where they want to place their investment funds. And I think that with a rising base rate, we always need to try and demonstrate that there's a positive differential between investing in property and what you can earn from cash in the bank. Investors are telling me at the moment that they're being offered on long-term deposit options, 3% to 4% just for holding cash in abeyance. So we have to be very clever as to how we advertise real estate in the UK, particularly commercial property investments, as being beneficial to the stakeholder. I think yields on subprime high street locations are starting to drift out towards 7%, and prime yields in central London are probably sat between 5 and 6%, which has been a drift of about 20% overall.
They always say that the way to make money in property is to buy before you see the light at the end of the tunnel. Are bargain hunters around waiting in the wings? Could they maybe leave it too late?
There are a huge number of bargain hunters. I mean, it's probably, you know, the lion's share of our phone calls at the moment from people that are looking for deals and discounts. And the reality is there just simply won't be enough to go around. So there will be people that have made mistakes. There'll be a small number of commercial mixed-use property assets that will get repossessed. There might be some land deals where new developments on a small scale have been part built. But who are they going to move those properties onto? Well, to pick up the baton and complete a half-built new development is a very specialist sector. So immediately that's not going to attract most of the bargain hunters that are out there. In reality, there's not going to be enough to go around, and I think people will miss the bus in this case, and I wouldn't put it more than a 12 to 18 month window.
Thank you for that, Adam. Now back to you, Dominic. The men in charge, Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak. Have they got what it takes to start addressing the problems in the property market?
they've done a good job in stabilising the situation, I think, at first to say that. And thank goodness the sort of crisis has passed, and reverse the mini-budget was important because costs and finance were accelerating rather rapidly. So that's great. You know, we've now got a sort of declining cost of finance and some stability in UK gilts, which is important for lending. So sort of a tick in that box. Can they solve the problems of the property market? I suppose I remain a cynic on that, sadly. I think there's some big long-term challenges in the property market, and whether there's the political will to take them on, I'm not so sure. I think there are items that divide people immensely. You know, there are problems in the letting sector, in the private rental sector. There's a shortage of supply. There's a desire to support the tenant, which is very valid. But there's also a concern amongst landlords that they're sort of becoming the like whipping boys of the sector, and are sort of shouldering the blame for a lack of social housing, which was obviously sold off. So I think that is a big problem, because we're seeing now, you know, you're seeing rents rising rapidly, and the increase to that isn't more regulation on landlord. As we've sort of seen in Scotland, that can have some fairly dramatic effects in itself, sort of stepping in too far to try and affect markets. The answer to that is increased supply. And, you know, for that, there needs to be a balance between tenants and landlord, obviously, and politically it's not very popular.
What's your sense on all of this, Adam?
I think that there's a mixture of people out there in the market, and some of them have probably taken a little bit too much risk. They've become a little bit overweight with the availability of cheap money, and they've tried to exploit it, and there'll be a small quantity of people that will no doubt hit the headlines who've made some mistakes with their investments. But the reality is the backbone of the market is incredibly strong and stable, and I really believe that the UK is a highly desirable location for international investment. We're starting to see a lot of American funds show an interest in disposals from UK pension funds, and we need to pay attention to the inflow of money that is definitely on the horizon.
Dominic and Adam, thanks very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. We appreciate your insights and your honest assessments. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast, where we'll be talking about how to make a buyer fall in love with your home in 7 seconds. With luck. If you want to know more, then be sure to subscribe.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.